Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle. I'm Maria Armudian. In this hour, our culture of excess. A psychologist talks about how America lost self-control and why we need to redefine success. America has entered the age of excess, according to our next guest. Driven by a maddening quest for perfection, technology, deregulation, and a superficial and often inaccurate mass media, our national psychology has become increasingly narcissistic, he says. That is leading to a culture of cheating, lying, reckless behavior, which has crashed the economy and continues to wreck lives in the national fabric. The emerging nation of narcissists has more consequences should the spiral continue, making a world that accepts cheating and lying as a way of life. Jay Slosar is a psychologist, professor of psychology, and author of The Culture of Excess, How America Lost Self-Control, and Why We Need to Redefine Success. Welcome, Jay Slosar.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Why don't we start with you're a psychologist, and not all of our listeners are. So perhaps we can start with a definition of narcissism, and what are the characteristics of this?
Right. Well, it is, in the formal sense, in our diagnostic and statistical manual, it has features for a full-blown diagnosis. I present a continuum in my book that the symptoms are increasing, the aspects of it. And the features include a sense of entitlement, grandiosity, high expectations, a sense of immediacy. With that comes some undesirable features also, such as having less empathy for others and being less forgiving. And while that could lead to a lot of drive and possibly in the workplace, many of our successful people, it's been written for a long time by psychology that many of our CEOs are very top people who reach top spots have high narcissistic features. Of course, there's a downside to it also. And if it's increasing across the culture, kind of like the water level's rising and we have more of these narcissistic features without being fully aware of it.
Well, let's start with the evidence that we're seeing an increase of this kind of person in society. What are we seeing?
Well, the forces that I talk a lot about are the impacting this, the technology and media and extreme capitalism. And we see excess everywhere. Now, there's a technical debate on measuring these narcissistic traits over generations because it is a difficult research endeavor. One researcher has, in her book, Generation Me, has put forth that the scores on the narcissistic personality inventory have increased a good 20 to 30% in today's college students from previous generations. So that the features that we're seeing, we're just hit with them every day, from the excess in purchasing and material things, even lack of self-control and obesity, budgets, whether it's state, federal, our individual budgets, just the stuff everyone, you know, is accumulating. We use a lot of medications. There's tremendous waste everywhere, as in healthcare. Even in prison, we put more people in prison than any other nation does. I mean, we just have excess everywhere from a declining self-control fueled by these higher narcissistic features that make us more impulsive and more entitled.
So you really do think that a lot of what is underlying, I should say, societal ills are really a result of kind of a growing narcissism?
Yes, but it's a cultural phenomenon. What I talk about is that not everybody has a narcissistic personality disorder. It's more a reaction and a response to powerful cultural forces. At one point, I even say, you know, culture trumps personality, that these powerful cultural forces are pushing us in this direction. You know, the quick speed of technology where everything is just so immediate, and you combine that with media and have that 24/7 cycle, and then the third feature, the extreme capitalism that has gone on with so much risk. And I put forth that those forces are cumulative and interactive in how they're influencing our personalities.
How these issues, like deregulation and like the technology and the high speed, how do they actually interact with human beings in order to make them more impulsive and more narcissistic, and some other things that you talked about in the book, the anxiety, the expectations of immediacy, losing of patience, the overweightness and the addictions. How does it feed in? I mean, what's the process?
Well, the basic point is that it doesn't apply limits or boundaries, you know, for example, with the deregulation and those aspects. It throws it wide open and anything goes until our behavior rages out of control. In other words, you know, kind of on a continuum, you may be healthy, but then these pressures and lack of boundaries and regulations cause you to go over the top and even possibly commit an illegal activity. A lot of the people arrested for some of these activities were not bad people. You know, they hadn't been criminals before, but they got caught up in the cultural forces where the top is kind of lifted off, and then eventually we take more risk and with less self-control, overdo it in all of the many areas and get into difficulties or health problems.
You know, one of the things that struck me is the bit about cheating and how much young people, students, are cheating and admitting to it and lying and believing that they have to cheat and lie in order to succeed in society.
Right.
And I wonder if, in fact, that is the phenomenon more than anything else. Is this kind of...
Well, that certainly is, as I put it, where it's at in terms of the psychological conflict. You know, in the chapter where I cite a lot of the data on surveys of teens and young people who, you know, have to admit that to get ahead, to do well, to be successful, they've got to be manipulative and lie at times. Yet, when asked about their own character, they rate it very, very highly. So, in other words, my character is terrific and great, but on a day-to-day basis, I do have to manipulate, lie, cheat, and steal to survive and to make it. So, you know, that seems like such an obvious conflict, but that's kind of the way culture in the world is. Now, there's probably always been that way to some extent. What I'm kind of saying is that, you know, like that water level again, it's just getting worse and worse to the point where it really does affect your sense of self. If I'm walking around and saying that I'm, you know, I'm great, I'm terrific and this and that, yet in fact my behavior doesn't match that, well, that's quite a conflict.
Yeah, I think the question that really is raised, and you played with it in your book in this chapter about the cheating, deals with how does a person maintain ethics and character and still be successful in today's business environment or in today's political environment?
That's right.
How do we answer that?
It gets down to real strength of character and leadership skills, you know, to stand out, the ability to withstand the big waves going, you know, and stand up and go against.
But as you said, culture trumps personality.
Yeah, it's very, very hard at this point. And it really does take, I think, a fuller awareness of it and some kind of hitting the bottom point where you say, wait a minute, enough already. And you start to take a more declarative, direct position and realize the kind of big wave that's sweeping over you and pull yourself out of it. Of course, some people are jolted out of that after they get into trouble or after they are exposed, so to speak. And then they pull themselves out of that. We've had so much of that. I'm hoping that we'll hit that point and people will, you know, turn around in the same way that when we had the Great Recession, it forced people to start saving money. Our savings rate for people was like 1 or 2%, you know, far less than other nations. And in 2007, it actually went below zero. It was negative. In other words, people were spending more than they were making. Well, after the recession hit, the savings rate now has gone up to 4 or 5%. And, of course, that's good. In other words, simply a reaction to the big crash.
You talked a bit about issues related to supercapitalism, issues related to perfectionism, mm-hmm. and then something you call a false society. Mm-hmm. How are these related?
They are different tracks. In the sense of the super capitalism, we just see, take the hedge funds, for example, they haven't been regulated, and we did away with certain rules that contributed to the Wall Street crash. It's again that out-of-control aspect that finally crashes and gets us into trouble. What happens is I think we get caught in such a way, in such an intense way, we get very perfectionistic and driven. We've got to make this go. And you have some success or big money that's more and push. And this drive filters down even to our younger people. And so we're seeing more of an aspect of a real drivenness of perfectionism. And even I mentioned that statement that we sometimes hear even in politics. I just cringe when I hear it. Failure is not an option.
But is it perfectionism Or is it something else? Because if it was really perfectionism, wouldn't the cheating issue not be so prevalent?
No, the perfectionism becomes so driven that you cheat and can't admit to it. The perfectionism is a very rigid position where you also become unaware of the cover-ups and the things. And then the bad part of it is that when you do get caught, you are so exposed and so vulnerable, it can even lead to an abrupt act of self-destruction and a failure. In my paper that I had talked about in the book, you know, I presented it at Quantico to law enforcement personnel because they have always had a high rate of suicide. And I made the connection that, you know, these are perfectionistic people thinking often, you know, very driven and in a right-wrong kind of manner. And when they make a mistake, they can't handle it. It's kind of like the bigger you are, the harder you fall. So the very successful, driven person, success after success, then encounters a failure, and it's like falling off a big cliff. And they can even at that point commit an abrupt act of self-harm.
Can you talk a bit about the media? What do you think the role of media is in creating this false society?
Well, the problem is, you know, to the often heard statement, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, we know from research that bad is stronger than good, as the researchers put it, that bad events, negative talk about someone, complaints, are remembered and incorporated far more readily than nice things or good things. And just in general, overall, the proliferation of the media, there's this intensity for really negative, bad things, in-your-face things. By the way, I was coming into the office, and I had the news on. There's a car chase thing going on, you know, and I'm sure it's on the TV showing some guy being followed. What's the point of that? We call attention to things like kidnappings and school shootings, and we have a red alert, things on kidnappings. Well, this sounds really good, but on the other hand, it induces such an anxiety and fear level across society that people change their lifestyles. They don't want their kid to go play in the park, or they're going to drive them to school, even though in the actual logic and data of it all is that kidnappings and school shootings have not increased. They're not on the increase and more of a problem than they were before. We're just heightened in anxiety about them. And so I think bad is stronger than good, as I put it, is really impacting us.
So let's wrap this into where you think we should go. Part of your subtitle is Why We Need to Redefine Success. And in your book, you talk about changing from a generation me to a generation we. How do we get there from here?
Well, not easily, and it's not going to happen quickly. These are powerful forces, and it's really going to take a good bit of change in time. It's first, as I mentioned before, the boundaries and regulation. I think we really have to get back to that, both with dealing with young children growing up, but also our culture and environment, too. You know, there's an old saying in family systems therapy, a child cannot develop and grow without limits and boundaries. And, of course, if those boundaries are too tight and rigid, that's not good. If they're too loose, that's not good. So the difficult part is finding that proper middle region. But the same is true of our economy and rapidly developing capitalism, what I've called out-of-control capitalism. There need to be boundaries and regulations in order for it to grow. And we're still resisting that at the cultural and political level, but that would really be essential for coming just down the line and shaping our behavior, because we will respond well to as adequate boundaries and regulations. And then the other part is certainly how we measure success. And we're always talking about the GDP. You know, I did look at that group you told me about, Redefining Progress, you know, which has very similar measures for trying to measure success, not by quantity, but by quality. The UN has developed some indices for what's going on in a community, ranging from healthcare to resources and things. And these types of indices should be talked about and presented and discussed much more than simply the amount of things that we buy, which is all that the GDP reflects. I like to ask some people about the GDP. You know, like in 2007, it was awfully high, but how much of that GDP was due to false or bad mortgage loans? If we take that out, then what happens? And then the other thing, I think, is reducing screen media time in terms of particularly for younger children. The National Academy of Pediatrics talks about less than...
When you say screen media... You
anything
mean
off the screen?
Okay.
You know, I see. We use that broader term now to include not just TV and computers, but even all the phones and texting and all those things. Just reduce that, particularly with younger kids, and really emphasize what a lot of professionals have been putting forth lately: that the younger person, the child, has time for free play, free unstructured play. That is so important for natural creativity. Everything's kind of programmed and given to the child, and they're getting all sorts of things off the screen media rather than having their own free play, creative, unstructured play.
Well, Jay Slosar, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jay Slosar is the author of The Culture of Excess, How America Lost Self-Control, and Why We Need to Redefine Success.